Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what's up?
All right, gentlemen, I've got a topic for you.
Uh-oh.
Surprise going to spring upon you right now.
Go ahead.
So, you know, you work a while and you try to achieve something. Like, let's say you work and you decide, hey, I want to be a magician. The next thing you know, you're working doing shows, you're traveling around the world. Maybe you're working at cruise ships, resorts, whatever, or maybe you're doing college shows. Or maybe you're a podcaster and you're podcasting, you know, several times a week, or all the above, whatever. And you have a good thing going. You have a good thing going. You're like, you know what? This is a good thing. I make a good income. I'm supporting myself. You know, I can get by just fine and maybe put a little away. And this is where it becomes a choose your own adventure. Do you say, yay me, let me just double down on this and just plan for the future and do this? Or do you say, yes, but I want more. I want to do more. I'm not satisfied. I need to try something even more difficult, even more challenging, and try to go to the next level.
I have thoughts on this, but I'd actually be really curious to hear Justin's take first.
You know, I think there's ultimately kind of to me that drive, the drive to do more, is kind of rooted in another more base question of whether or not you are kind of working to live or living to work. And if you have imbued in yourself the desire to make your work something that you enjoy and find creatively fulfilling, or fulfilling on enough of a base level that it really drives you, then I don't think that there's much of a choice than to keep going forward, more, bigger, better. You know, that's every success in life reveals kind of like 8 more challenges. And to me, that's the fun part, is figuring out what those challenges are and how to do better at them.
So I don't know. This is really challenging to me because the times I've flirted the hardest with deep depressions have been times where they're in the denouement after a big achievement, a multi-year challenge, and realizing it and winning, you know, or feeling like you won, you know, you define your own level of success. But that wave of like, well, I guess now I just hold on to this real tight and hope nobody takes it away. That is agonizing. Like that is astonishingly challenging and breaks my brain. So as a result, it's been easier for me to say, okay, well, what I need to do is consciously make the decision to train my brain to decide whatever I've got is nothing, and that the real prize is, you know, to find something else new. When you have that, on the one hand, it's disrespectful to the work that you've already done because you don't appreciate, like, it's pretty great. Hey, Brian, it's pretty great that you made an internet show called Scam School. But happiness, internal happiness, didn't occur until I decided, like, well, in my story, that needs to be a stepping stone to something else. And then you begin the journey again. I guess what I'm trying to say is my favorite part of all video games is the beginning. And if you find yourself in a place of stewardship at the end, it's very easy to get depressed and bummed out about. And for your own mental health, I think it's better to decide, okay, everything that happened was leading up to this moment, and now you're beginning the real video game. And it's this constant resetting that I do in my brain.
I've looked at moments in my life where I was my unhappiest, and they've either when nothing seemed to be working or when everything was working at the level that I wanted things to work at a couple of years before. You know, I remember when I spent, like, you know, after I got my first house, I remember, like, I spent a year later, I realized I'd been there for a year And I'd been making bills, paying, you know, getting things done, whatever, had a comfortable life, free time, whatever. And I was miserable and I was terrified that the next 10 years would pass like that 1 year. I have this sort of year that I don't remember anything happening other than I just did the same sort of thing. You know, put out a couple new magic tricks, did whatever, and that was it. And that's when I made this decision that I needed to embrace risk. I needed to be much more risky in what I was trying to do with my time because I wanted to have bigger challenges. I needed bigger challenges. The challenges are more important to me than the rewards. That was the realization. The challenge I was trying to accomplish was more important than the reward. And that's when I decided to step it up. And now I kind of do this thing like every 5 years or so, I say, okay, now what are we going to go for now? Now what was crazy 5 years ago isn't crazy anymore. So what do I want to go for that would sound crazy right now?
Yeah, it sounds like you're echoing some of the same sentiments, the idea that, you know, let's always be at the beginning of an adventure, like whatever mm-hmm. happened before. I got to tell you, like, let's say somebody handed you, here's what I don't think a lot of people realize is the very same things that you want, if handed them and told, congratulations, you've got it, how quickly that starts to feel like a prison. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you know, there's that, the old saying, you know, of find me the hottest person that you think is the most attractive and I'll show you somebody who's tired of having sex with them. And that's, you know, the nature of, I think, humanity. I mean, like we are pattern recognizing creatures, right? And so we will get bored if we do not continue to find new nuances in the pattern or find new patterns.
I have friends that are like perfectly happy doing kind of a regular sort of job, saving their money and then going to Star Wars Celebration and spending $5,000 on gear. That's their thing. That's their ambition is like, I'm going to go to this con. I'm going to do this. Their personal ambition is more of focused. Their ambitions are more focused towards their engaging whatever part of the brain we'd say that affects. And so I think that people who are we're very unique, and I think our listeners are probably, a lot of them are pretty unique in that we are people who want more out of the rest of it. You know, we're trying to do bigger and better things.
That's a really interesting door to open is I would say the healthy thing for most people to do is to recognize they have a job where they trade their time for money. And then when their job is over, they get to enjoy things they love. And yet I don't think I'm talking out of turn when I say that the three of us are people who are like, no, I reject your paradigm. I should get to do whatever I want and love and make my life my job. And, you know, let me there's a lot of trade-offs. On the one hand, it's, you know, we find ourselves overexposing and emotionally, you know, like if you're trading your time for money, I would assume it's easier to have to handle a boss saying, hey, you sent in this thing, the proposal didn't go through, and you're like, eh, whatever, you know, whereas like for the three of us, that's emotionally crushing and it's an indictment on us as individuals or whatever, because I don't know. It seems like there's something to the trade-off of, on the one hand, we get to, quote-unquote, not work all day because all we do is we make our lives work. But on the flip side is we're so very, very exposed and we're just wilting flowers under the harsh sunlight of other people's judgment.
Yeah. I think about, like, nobody knows what you're capable of. Nobody knows what you're capable of, and it includes ourselves. And the one thing that you can know is how far you'll go to try to achieve something. And I think that's the big difference there. And I think that that's finding that certain amount of challenge. I remember like when I was visiting the Disney Zoo, Animal Kingdom, and talking to one of the people there who works with the gorillas, and how what they do is they hide their food every day in different locations. Because if the gorillas get the food in the same location every day, they get bored and depression and needing that challenge. And I think that, and there can be different challenges and there being bigger challenges, but I don't know. I just think, at what point do you say, okay, all right, I'm here, now I'm ready to go? And I guess it really is going to be, you do it before you're ready. You do it before you're ready, before it makes sense to do that, because that's where it makes challenge. But everybody else will tell you, like, oh, wait, no, don't do this, whatever. And I think part of the problem too, when you look at other people's success, is that we all, you know, I got to talk to Apollo Robbins this weekend. And, you know, Apollo did this wonderful demonstration about confirmation bias. And confirmation bias is such a problem for all of us, because, and particularly with successful people, is that you think the things that you did are the reason you were successful. And yes, those were parts of the success, but often the major reason you were successful was really luck. That's not always the case. I think there are lots of examples of people who were so determined and focused something was going to work for them. But there are a lot of people who are a lot of entrepreneurs who right place, right time, or they were the second partner brought on because they needed a software engineer and they were there and this company became a huge hit. And now they're like, oh, this person's brilliant. Like, well, they actually were right place, right time next to somebody who maybe was brilliant in that moment. And now we sort of exaggerate their success because of the scale of the reward. But then there are other people who just repeatedly engineer their thinking for success. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate that or understand that.
Yeah. Well, so what does it mean? Like, I assume a lot of folks listening right now are people who, I'm wrapping my mind around this as I'm pitching it to you. But the type of people who listen after things, I think are people who are creatives or want to be creatives or whatever. I don't think we've talked about on this program how to handle success. Like, would that be what we're zeroing in on here?
Sure, we could talk about that, or, you know, achievement in some level, like getting to that. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I was, you know, 22, and I was now a working magician, and I hated it, though. I got the thing, and I didn't want the thing, you know, and I didn't know what to do next.
Well, and I guess I can relate to that. I didn't hate the thing. I hated having nothing else on my plate. Like, mm-hmm. So now I guess I'm just supposed to hold this as close to my chest as possible and just fear somebody trying to take it away every day. And I know people who are older and retired, and that's part of why culturally they get into these dynamics of, like, you know, yeah, they're trying to take our jobs. They're trying to take my money. They're trying to, you know, take away blank. Is like, that is what I fear, is getting into that mindset. So the moment I have anything, I just, in my mind, I just want to reset and just say, whatever it is that's happened to get me to this point, that was the necessary but not sufficient step that is now beginning the real adventure from age, you know, 42 to 47 that I'm on now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it also breeds, for people that are achievement oriented, you know, what you describe, Brian, is like, okay, well, if I'm a touring magician, now the main focus, again, in pattern recognition, is about loss and not gain. You know, it's about, oh, wait, did that college call me back? I wonder who they booked. Now I'm going to look up this other guy's website and run him down in my head about how, you know, he's not all that good. And maybe those people are stupid, yada, yada, yada. Just like, breeds this element of loss prevention, you know, instead of, well, wait, okay. Well, once I kind of max out on doing colleges, then the focus should be on the Halloween Horror Nights of the world, or it should be on this, or it should, let's look at TV. Let's look at all this other stuff. Let's, you know, so many thoughts, whether or not they become the actual pathway that you're going on, in my opinion, start off as like side things to the other thing that you're doing. It just matters that you're doing something, you know. For a moment, Brian, your drive to be on television was rooted in, man, I could book a lot more college gigs, right?
Yeah, no. And in fact, it took all the way to having a television show to make me realize that, wait, that's not how it works. And that's not even what I wanted, but I am glad that, I've introduced myself to a lot of other people.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to have a bigger thing you work for, and then other things appear along the way. Sometimes you find out that, you know, it just being out there, like I've noticed the more I'm out promoting or talking or doing things, the more opportunities come my way that maybe are unrelated to what I'm trying to do. And if I wasn't so focused on what I was trying to do, I'd be like, oh, cool. You know, when I decided, hey, I wanted to pick up coding and learning how to do this, I started getting offers for jobs to work at startups, you know, that would have been weird for somebody to have offered me that 6 months prior. But after I started making things and doing things, I had people who were like, oh, we'd love for you to work with us. When I'm like, I've only been doing this a short amount of time, like, but that didn't matter to them.
Because that's actually a really good point. The idea that there are these parallel realities that exist outside of the path we've all chosen, like in an alternate universe, because I don't doubt for 1 second, Andrew, that you would not be an MVP coder at a startup and yet at the same time that
I was
feels,
20 years younger.
I mean, even now or whatever, but I mean, like there's some version, there's some parallel universe where you do that and it works great or whatever. And yet it just, at the same time feels like such an ill fitting suit to the way I know you and mm-hmm. you're savvy when it comes to, being present and connecting with other people and telling artistic tales and all that stuff, because all of those don't matter in the role of a coder, but they do matter in the role of a novelist, storyteller, cruise ship illusionist, and so on.
I can think of a couple examples. Like, I mean, I have one personal, which is like, I did a pilot for the Cartoon Network, right? And then that didn't look like it was, you know, it was going to go anywhere. And that's shortly after is when I started writing books. Had I did, you know, a 6-episode or 12-episode season for them, I could see that, you know, and had that my show back then, I wouldn't have had the time for books. I wouldn't have got into that. And then I may have decided, you know what, I like this kid's television thing. Let me go try to pursue this. Or let me get out of TV entirely because, you know, the money would have been horrible and maybe I would have gone to tech or something like that. But there is a very easy path where I'm still like, I'm going to write my novels later on in life and not now. And I'll be able to talk a bit more about stuff maybe in a couple weeks. But I'm glad I chose this path, folks. Real, real, real glad.
it's good stuff.
Yeah.
You chose wisely.
But I could see, Brian, I could see like a world where you had you're working at Dell and you're like, you know what? Like you go talk to a friend, an entertainer friend. They say, here's what sucks about the road or college. This is not really where you want to go, whatever kind of thing. And then you end up still at some point live streaming or podcasting or something. And you're a guy that didn't go do one route into it. You did another route where maybe not even with the magic as a focus for it, you know?
Yeah. Man, that's a wild thing to wrap my mind around now that I think about it. Sorry, I thought I had something queued up. I don't.
There's a world where Justin's in New York and I don't say, hey, come down and work with me. And he gets a call from somebody who's like, hey, listen, we're doing a comedy showcase. We need you to come do a bit. And Lauren Michaels is there.
I just recalled the half-cued thought. A friend of mine works in the t-shirt printing business, and he does a lot of t-shirts for bands and for comedians and, you know, for their tours and is familiar with the college market. And he said something last week or the week before that really rung true to me. He said that everybody has a tendency to look at what they've got right now and assume that's all that exists. And for example, he mentioned one prop comedian who has a really good gig where he goes to Australia every year, and he spends exactly 6 months and 1 day in Australia, because if you spend 6 months and 1 day, then it alters how much you owe in taxes, and it ends up being a really good benefit to do it that way. So in his world, Australia is the only market that ever exists, and that's all that there can be or whatever. And to me, he said, you know, it's like you look at the internet and you know, all you think is that the internet is all that exists. But meanwhile, you know, you've forgotten the fact that you made this entire career touring colleges. Why don't you involve the two in there? So I do think that there is kind of this nearsightedness that happens in your world, no matter what your world is.
Mm-hmm.
You just assume that this is all of the market that there is to exist. And just like right now, it never occurs to me that I will teach a philosophy course at a major state institution. Likewise, there's something equally ridiculous that somebody might be very, very good at that they might have one of those blind spots and not even be considering.
Prisons are state institutions. The same.
Yeah, I you know what? I think, and actually, hold on. As an exercise, like that is an offhanded, crazy, wild hair of a thought. But let's wrap our minds around that. Like, what would it take? I guess if I wanted to teach philosophy at a state institution, and that institute, and I didn't mind that institution being a prison, I would form a nonprofit and start reaching out and talking about my previous credentials, and I don't know, like suddenly I'm trying to figure out like how could I make that happen.
I'm sure there are a number of groups and stuff you could get in contact with that are looking for doing, you know, adult education or whatever, and
yeah,
you know, they're in different kinds of prisons too, and that there's a the project that there's a great project that's run out of New York, which is magicians going in and visiting, working with high risk teens and stuff, you know, juvenile in kids in juvenile hall, et cetera, and teaching the magic.
And I guess the answer is just be the guy that creates the framework to make that happen, because no, we can't all be magicians that are teaching at risk youth tricks, but we can all be the people who think that's a good idea and endeavor to make that happen.
And also, it's like, I think to go to your point earlier about you only know what is in front of you. You don't like what keeps us in our boxes, what keeps us in our lanes. And this is the tricky thing, right? Is that you don't want to diversify too much or run after every little thing, because then all of a sudden you're not putting the time and effort and energy into the thing that you really want to. Right? You can oftentimes become less productive because you are more productive looking for the lane than you are spending time making headway in it. However, that idea of saying like, well, no, I can do that. Let me do that. Let me get out of my comfort zone and let me just try that. Right. It's so amazing how that spark happens, how you follow through on it, and how oftentimes you figure out, wow, it was really just me in my head giving me very good reasons, capital V, very good reasons why this couldn't happen. And then you try it and you're like, oh, wow, turns out I know how to do all this. You know, for example, one of the big things that I wanted to do this year and I'm going to do, you know, in a couple of weeks is do a live show for the podcast, right? And previously I'd kind of done sort of halfway stuff, like do house shows, like I'd seen certain music acts do and everything. But this is like, you know, I'm going to be in Philadelphia for the PAX Unplugged thing, talking, giving a talk for the tabletop people. And then the next day at night, I'm going to go do a live show. And it's like, there's nothing in that process that I've now done that was outside of my capacity to do. Not finding a venue was emailing a few friends that I knew in Philadelphia. You know, booking the venue was being on email and asking and talking to them real quick and then figuring out a number that was good for everybody. And that's that. Now, you know, plugging it is going to be plugging it. And then we'll see how many people show up. But it's like, this is, you know, there previously could be a million good reasons why, you know, maybe the crowd will be small, or maybe this will be, you know, bad, or maybe it's like, but if I want to be on a next level for what I do, I've got to behave next level. And next level is doing shows where people can find you and you can continue to build a big, vibrant show, you know? And that's like, it's amazing how thin that membrane is once you walk through it.
Do you know what this reminds me of? And I don't think we've talked about this on the show, but oftentimes people will ask me how a particular magician did a trick. And my answer is always the same. I say, let's pretend that you knew for a fact that in 3 hours, a camera crew was going to show up and you had to replicate this effect. How would you do it? And then they oftentimes will give a detailed, bizarre reaction using a kludge of, you know, half thought up stuff. And then they'll say, well, that's how I do it. But that can't be how they did it, because that would just be dumb. And it's like, guess what? That's exactly how they did it. However you would do it right now, using not made up imaginary things that you would imagine a magician has access to, but actual stuff that you can get your hands on in the next 20 to 40 minutes, that is very likely how they did it.
I just want to say, like, I think a big part too is you have to move from being a person that wants things to happen to a person that makes things happen. And that's because Justin, you mentioned, like, well, I called the venue, I called this. These are things that a lot of people would go, you know, I want to do a show. And if I met somebody who could make that happen for me, to be great. And I've had people, like, it annoys me because I've encountered people in my life that are like, oh, you write great. I've been wanting to meet you because you can help me write this book, or you can do this thing for me. And it's like, that's the hard part, is the making it happen thing, you know, and you got, if you want this, then go do it. And I've had projects where I'll, now what I kind of do, if I had some things with people, maybe I'm like, oh, I might be interested to work with this person. I'll be like, okay, hey, I got this part done. Can you go do this part? And they'll be like, oh yeah, no, I'll get. And I'm like, well, you know, and they're like, how's this other part coming? I'm like, I'll let you know when you finish the thing you need to do. And you find out how many people just aren't doers. They're not makers. They're not doers. They have the capability to do it, but they'll want to do it if somebody else will come along and do all the hard parts for them.
Yeah, I think you're calling me out on something that I've thought about for a while. I've had you and I have talked about this. Like, I had a couple of science fiction short story ideas that I thought were clever, and it's just so tempting to believe that there exists a silver bullet, some other magical partner that you can encounter that will do the hard parts that you don't want to do. But it's not true. It's like, it's up to you to just do it. And I think, I was talking to Bonnie the other day, and I gave myself a challenge. I said I should write something, literally anything, doesn't matter, whatever kind of short story it is. And then send it out to everybody on my email list, which is getting pretty sizable now. I think the scam stuff email, the total fan list and everything is up to 115,000 people now. So,
God damn,
there's really no excuse for me to act like, I can't act like, oh, I wish I could write something and then be a writer like Andrew and have lots of people read it, because that is a factual reality right now at this moment. The only thing stopping it from being true is that I haven't bothered to write anything, and I haven't bothered to press a button saying, send this to all the people.
So positioned to, if you enjoy the, and that's the hard part, is if you enjoy the writing part, I think you will once you get into that part. If you enjoy that part of it, you are in such a great position. There is 2 years from now, there's an alternate universe, or maybe it's this universe, where there's a big, thick science fiction paperback release with Brian Brushwood's name on it, because Brian Brushwood's the new, and I'm not going to name names, but we have friends that are writers and sci-fi and genre stuff. Brian, you're smarter than them. Okay. And I've known a number of people that have had hit books. They've had that one hit book and the follow-ups have sucked because they had one idea and people are like, oh, I love so-and-so. What else do you like by them? I don't think you have a problem. I'm excited about this because I think that, and you said, hey, I have that list. You could send that out there. You will have people enthusiastic about that. You have the capability. I used, back when our audience was much smaller, I used our audience to get into sci-fi with Grendel's Shadow, and I used that to get in with Public Enemy Zero. The platform is much bigger, and especially huge, even much bigger for you, that, holy crap, Brian. I mean, that Listen, would be...
You also have every... tool. You want to write like Andrew Mayne? You literally, it's not like you don't have the blueprint. You have literally every tool.
In fact, I have literally like Andrew Mayne at my disposal.
Andrew's iMac from Coconut Creek. Like, literally the idea. And Andrew would give me stories and stuff and scripts to read from when I was in high school, right? But it was intermittent and not to the level that he writes now, because what changed is that he was just like, all right, let me write one thing, and, you know, gave it to me, and I talked with him about it, and we went back and forth, and that first thing was Grendel's Shadow, right? Like, and it went through some processes, and it went through some revisions, but ultimately, that was that, and then past that, it's like, you know, it ain't, you know, it's like, how do you lose weight? Expend more calories than you take in. How do you become a good writer? Just keep writing. And what Andrew did was write a book, read a book, write a book, read a book. And, you know, I wish we were able to give the big, you know, punchline, but it worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's okay. I think you guys have effectively challenged me. So, in fact, my pick will be everybody pick something that they that's outside of their comfort zone and go for it.
Well, hey, you want to? I had this idea. So, what about this? Because everybody and we, everybody on this podcast has very skeptical leering eye toward like New Year's resolutions and stuff like that, you know, that obviously there, you know, can be a little bit of just itching the part of your brain that wants to do something without actually doing something and all that. But here's what I would say. Here's what I would challenge. Do your New Year's resolution for After Things now. Say, what can I be doing from now until New Year's? You can see to the end of it, right? It's not that far. That by the time that New Year's comes around, you're like, this isn't a resolution. This is something that I've already been doing and I'm going to take to the next level in the next calendar year. You know, like do that. And so, Brian, if this is the writer New Year's resolution, then start writing. Right.
Maybe,
and then
it is.
By 2018, either it's either out and now you're focused on the next thing that you want to go down on this journey with, or it's putting the finishing touches on getting ready to put out what you're doing. But I think start now. So by the time that that everything comes around, everybody's talking about the great blue impossible thing, like even if it's losing weight, get the gym membership now. Right. Yeah. Start going now. Get used to it. So at least it's not as, you know.
And by the way, tell yourself that you're not really starting your resolution. What you're doing is you're just getting ready for when the New Year's resolution
exactly.
happens.
Exactly. You're preparing for your New Year's resolution by doing your New Year's resolution.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's actually, there's some pretty good science to back that up. There's case studies of people who are like, I'm supposed to walk a mile every day or whatever, and they just won't do it. And they said, new rule. Your only rule is to put on your walking suit, put on your running clothes. That's all you have to do. That is and it's like, once you put on the running clothes, you're like, well, it would just be dumb for me to not go running now. And it's like, and so, likewise, when it comes to the dieting stuff, it's like, my job is not to eat only broccoli and carrots. My job is to, I have one job, and that's to set those in front of me every mm-hmm. single day when I'm sitting at the table or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, start with that, and then yeah, totally. That was for me. Like I, on my own, reached that. Like if I just put on my running clothes, my walking clothes for going, I'm like, I'll just do it. Or my gym clothes, like I'll just go to the gym now. I'll just do this. And when dieting, the best thing that works for me is, don't say, oh, I can't have that. But like, well, just go get the salad with the chicken breast on it first. Just have that, and if you're still hungry, eat whatever you want.
Yep, yep, yep. Yeah, that's a really good trick. Is just say, rules are you can have anything you want after you do blank, and then you do blank, and it's like, I don't really want that now. He's like, is that how that worked out? Did it?
So yeah, if you want, guys, audience, ladies, everybody, robots, tell us what what the step up you want to do is. What's your next big step? Tell us what your thing is.
Hey, a quick question. This is out of nowhere, but somebody didn't like in my email that we said the word ladies. She thought that was a misogynist term, and I will grant her that it was in. There were two lines. There was one line that says it makes the ladies swoon, but the next line said, and the fellows too, they just won't admit it. So it was something that used an old trope and then immediately cast a spotlight on like what an old trope that is. But she was just like makes the ladies swoon. Well, you're a big old jerk, aren't you? And is ladies a misogynist word for ladies?
It you can be offended by whatever you want. And if, okay. Or did you intend to offend?
No, certainly not.
All right. And then is it something that we've discussed or we've been made aware of that is popularly as ladies and gentlemen offensive?
Well, exactly. It was like, and that's what I expressed to her. I was just like, I've spent 20 years saying ladies and gentlemen. You're telling me I've been a secret sexist the whole time? I don't know.
I listen, we don't want to offend anybody. And the problem is everybody gets their own person, has their own personal vocab. There are ones that we broadly accept as larger vocabularies, like, yeah, there are words I won't say even in private company, N-word, things like this, because I don't want to say these things. And I try to be conscious of this sometimes. It's like I'll describe, you know, my Jessica Blackwood books. I'll say, oh, you know, she's a woman or she's a female, and be like, oh, a female. I'm like, well, it's often in law enforcement things, you tend to put those things before there. And I think the problem is often people don't look to see was their intent. And I don't know, but everybody there, you get so many, I've had somebody wrote me a letter like, oh, you had your character refer to herself as girl. I have women friends, lady friends, women friends who use that. That's their inner monologue. And I was told I was wrong to do this. And I'm like, I was very truthful about people I talk to about how they do their inner monologues. And I'm being told that I was wrong. And I was, as a man, I'm like, I researched that, and I understand that for this particular woman, that's not how she sees herself. And when she came across that got in her craw. But I'm like, I can name you the person that I spoke to about this inner monologue and how she talks to herself. And this is what she said she used. I'm like, okay, do you like this? She's like, yes, I like this. So guess what? Everybody can have their own personal vocabulary of what makes them offended. But the first question is, was there an intent to offend? And two, is it that universal, or is that just somebody saying, ah, this gets me up? And maybe, I mean, I'm open to the idea that I'm wrong on these things, but I'm noticing there is this, people are much more eager to say, hey, you know, this, and this. And there are cases I'm guilty of saying a lot of stupid things and using terms and things without thinking about that could be hurtful or whatever to people. And it's not my intent. And I know I've got my own limited perspective, but this was an issue where this was something I went out of my way to make sure, you know, but I had one person's like, you know, one person out of, you know, about 100,000
sure,
had an offense to this and decided it was universal.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's the bitter irony, of course, is that, you know, we're offended. We, the people writing the thing, are offended that they assume it's universal, but also they're offended because in their version of reality, you know, they're ascribing onto the author of the materials worldliness that maybe we don't actually have. How about that?
Or we're being accused. That's the problem, is I was being accused of maybe having these negative, I possessed it, but it was started off with an accusation of that. And that's what that was bothering to me, is like, you didn't ask how I meant this or what I meant. You just made this assumption that I was trying to be paternalistic or this or whatever. And to me, that's like, that's not fair. That's not cool.
You know, this is, I don't think I'm over projecting here, but, man, how great would it be if all three of us were the type of people that could just be totally not bothered by somebody saying that kind of thing. and I know all three of us are working on it, but it's like, how great would it be to just be like, ah, man, that's a real bummer that you read it that way.
I didn't come up until now. It didn't come up. I read this. I'm like, there's no reason for me to respond. And then it came, you brought, I'm like, oh yeah, here's this thing. I'm like, yeah. And I'm done. I mean, to me, it's like, I'm a very lucky guy. I have all of the privilege cards you can imagine. I get this. I know this. I'm also a guy that tries to count those every day and pay attention to the fact of like, hey, you know what? Let's look at it from somebody else's point of view. Let's look at it from somebody else's point of view. Let's check your behavior. And there are a number of times, you know, I did a lecture yesterday and I made some comment about, you know, I made two comments that I'm like, you know what? These could be perceived as perhaps, you know, a little more chauvinistic than I meant. And they were the most slightest things in the world, but in this environment. And I'm also like, everybody knows, if you know me, you know what I meant. But people who don't know me know what I meant. I'm living in a world where those people are going to be the first ones to judge me.
Sure.
So. Well, I mean, this has been probably the most fascinating question that I've seen, that I've loved thinking about in my life, is communication. You know, like, and it's as when I used to do stand up in college, and I'd be like, man, these jokes, I think these jokes are really, really funny. And when I tell them in a certain way, people laugh, and in another way, they don't. Or like, you know, there's just a difference between the communication of where the audience is and where you are. In your case, Brian, like, you know, we had a private conversation about a situation where there, you know, whether or not there is, it would best to email or to talk in person with somebody. Right. And, you know, my point was, I oftentimes find email to breed the kind of stuff that you just said, you know, where it's like in one person's point of view, it means a certain thing. In your point of view, you're like, oh my God, not only did it not mean that, I was trying to make a point on that. I was trying to exploit that trope, which I think if we're both in agreement that that is a trope that needs to be exploited and turned on its head, then it is doubly offensive that you would think of me the agent of the other side. And you know, that level of communication and the idea that what you say is not what is heard on the other side, not what is seen on the other side so often, to me is just fascinating. It is the answer to so many problems in life. Is like, there is a fidelity issue in reality, and what you believe and can have very, very, very compelling evidence to prove is the way that this is, or you meant it, doesn't mean that in that moment it was not read the other way for a million different reasons.
Yeah. And it's not like that's going to fix itself at any time soon.
It's reality.
Yeah.
It is the life we live in. We fool ourselves into thinking that, you know, if like, oh, well, I said this, look at this. Let me break it down. It's a perfect look. I have all. I've accounted for the remainders. It's all here, you know. But for some people, you saying two means them hearing three.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a fast social media environment. We live in an age where you can very quickly make accusations and have them go around and put people on defensive. And there are, you know, we're seeing now a lot of just very bad behaviors finally get attention to, this and that. And, you know, and there is the problem, though, when we conflate, you know, a poor choice of words to somebody who is a horrible, horrible monster, you know, or a poor, what appears to you to be a poor choice of words or whatever. And again, people now have their own personal vocabularies of what this means and stuff. And I'm like, what's the intent? What's the intent? You know, I'll share stuff with Justin. There was a thing about, you know, I forgot what it was, you know, like Halloween costumes for kids, you know, what's appropriate, you know, cause like, you know, hear this like, oh, you know, is it appropriate for a kid to dress up like Mona, you know? And it's like, that's a contentious debate. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's great that we have, you know, we're getting more heroes of all different ethnicities and colors and backgrounds and stuff. And I like the idea that any little kid could look up to them and say, I want to be like them. It's not because of the color of their skin or ethnicity, it's because of their character. And I think that's a great thing. But there are other people like, well, it's cultural cultural appropriation. And it's like, yeah, you can call it that. Maybe. I mean, all cultures appropriation. And I understand too, if you come from a culture where you've watched a lot of be eroded away, you're sensitive to the idea of things being, you feel like something's being taken away from you, that this is, you identify with this and you feel a sense of ownership on that. And I get that, you know. I mean, I don't feel that, but I get that. I understand there's a reason why people feel these days, you know.
So. Yeah. Was there a resolution to that email you received about the email? Or like, did you respond?
I was given homework of read this article about why the word lady is inappropriate. And I was checkmated at that moment because my bandwidth does not allow me.
Well,
so that person,
if you're
sent you
at the
link.
Point, hey, you have to go read this thing to find out, because yeah, it's hard to, I can't explain in a sentence or two,
sure,
or three. You need to go look up this thing, read this study, and find out why, and why I was offended.
Right.
Well, like, would the conversation be different if the person just said, "Hey, that using it in that context offended me." Like, rather than whatever accusation element or whatever, like,
well,
how would you respond to
something? And that's the unfortunate thing, is that in a parallel universe where everybody got on the same page, I would imagine it would go like, hey, I don't know if you realize what you did, but you inadvertently offended me. Here's the reasons that I know this. We're friends, so let me guide you through this journey of enlightenment. Now you understand why saying, you know, ladies is probably not great for some people. But instead, that's not how it went. It went like, ladies, eye roll. And I was like, I'm sorry, did I miss a thing? And it's like, why don't you get woke? Here's an article. Sure. And then
I'm posing the hypothetical to be any element of guidance for people who are listening to this and want maybe an idea of how to respond when someone says you offended them personally.
I don't really. I mean, apparently I haven't handled it to completion or very well. but basically, I said, is ladies an offensive term? I've used it for, 20 years on stage. If it is an offensive term, then I would like very much to understand why. Mm-hmm. And the answer I got was like, read this. Meh. Yeah. And then followed by a week later. Did you ever read that novel I sent you?
Yeah, I think they lost the argument at that point. I think that there are a number of terms that we can pretty much understand why this is, hey, I'm going to use some pejoratives and that we could use. And I know there's lots of things there you should know. Like, nobody tomorrow we're going to see there's going to be which fraternity decided that blackface was a funny idea. And they're going to be publicly shamed. And at this point, I'm totally cool with that because guess what, folks? Straight up blackface, not a good idea. Clearly offends, but there will be people who didn't know. And that, like, all right, I'm not going to defend not knowing that, because that's just how could you possibly at this point not know that? Again, maybe you're 17 and you're dumb. I don't know. But there are other terms. It's like, I don't think, hey, Brian, you live with women. Have any of them ever pointed out that term is...
No, not so much.
Yeah,
they're grounded.
I've been called out for using female because, like, oh, well, this means this. Like, do you think I meant that? I'm like, well, no. I'm like, then why is that offensive?
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, though, I think with stuff like that, I've always found that the best thing is not to debate whether or not it is. It is to explain my intentions in saying it and opening up, a dialogue on like, hey, look, totally understand if you find it offensive, this is what I was trying to do. I usually start from the probably cowardly defensive position of like, this was my point and I apologize for failing in making it. But I don't know. I mean, I think that those arguments so often are just unwinnable.
That's when it's a person decides that yes, is it offensive to that person? 100%. Does that mean that you should not use that word because a person the first time in your 40 years of life has told you they're offended by it? It's like, I don't know. I mean, if I hear a couple more people say, hey, maybe you shouldn't use that in reasonable people, I'll be like, oh yeah, okay, I'm getting it. Because there's, I don't know if the person is that I'm talking to is a super hypersensitive person, and there are people who just, will look for counting offenses, and there are people who do that because they've been dealing with a lot of them, and I don't know, but I'm like, yeah, if I pick up some more signals on this, I'll pay attention. But if it's an outlier, then maybe it's not me.
Yep, agreed. Hey, do we have picks?
Surely. My pick is Google SketchUp, actually. I've been using it. I got a new 3D printer, and I've actually been working on another project. I've been using it. It's been great I use it actually in production design and stuff, too, for, designing magic props and stage and stuff. SketchUp is, I think there's still a free version. Not sure, but it was originally owned. It was separate, got bought by Google, then it got sold by Google. But it was a very useful program for just doing, it's an architectural CAD design program, so it's very fast. So I like SketchUp a lot. It's an extrusion-based, so.
Right on.
I just used it the other day for something really quick, so I like it.
I have a dumb app that I'm just obsessed with, and I'm going to blame Brant Hughes for getting me stuck on it, but it's a little game called Balls, B-A-L-L-Z. It feels a bit like a Breakout, only you keep earning more balls that hit down more blocks, and they're very satisfying when the balls hit the blocks, and then the blocks go away and numbers go down, and you feel like you've achieved something when deep in your heart of hearts you know that you're a fraud and you haven't done anything, and it's been 3 hours and you've eaten a salad at Flora's Mexican restaurant.
We can all relate to that, Brian.
I'm just saying, yeah. I want to make it universal, all right?
My pick is this weird acid trip of a game, Super Mario Odyssey for the Switch. It is getting a lot of good attention, and I think rightfully so. It is incredibly creative and inventive, and I am almost positive it's a metaphor for heroin recovery.
Right on.
Delightful. Delightful.
So you play games now, huh, Justin?
I do. I have a Switch. I streamed a game. It's a thing. What was that?
Watch me play.
My term, watch me play.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.